Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart. Fred Williams is out on assignment. And what an honor. There is a museum in Montana, a fabulous fossil museum, the Glendive Dinosaur and Fossil Museum. And back in 2007, I interviewed the curator, and then we did an update in 2010. And now, welcome back to Real Science Friday, Otis Klein. How are you, Otis?
I'm just fine, Bob. It's a real pleasure to be with you again.
Well, I saw that on your website, I saw that your museum should be opening at least for the weekends, the first weekend in April, I think April 6th and 7th.
That is correct.
All right. So I think that we have a lot of new listeners to this program, not only in Colorado, but all over the country as Real Science Friday continues to gain in popularity. So could you tell us about the museum? I've been to the museum. Otis, it is stunning how tremendous it is. What an honor to God the way you guys have used your resources building what to me is like a world-class museum right there smack dab in the middle of Montana.
Well, it does my heart good to have you say that, Bob. I appreciate that. And yes, the museum is a different museum. We happen to be the largest dinosaur and fossil museum in the United States to present the fossils in the context of biblical creation.
Oh, okay. Well, you're presenting actual fossils in the context of God as our creator.
That's absolutely right. And that means that not only did God create, he didn't just start it out and use evolution. No, he created everything after its kind right from the get-go. But it also means if you look at the geological evidence and other evidence too, that it was done not very long ago, about 6,000 years ago. Mm. So it's a recent creation, and there's certainly no evolution involved at all.
Mm. Yeah, the evolution where we're told that from an original single cell, we have all the diversity of life on Earth, that's simply not scientifically reasonable. It's not historically accurate. It takes tremendous faith to believe in that, faith against the evidence. On the other hand, of course, things change. Everyone agrees that things change over time. But you don't find, for example, the appearance of vital organs in a creature that previously didn't have the vital organ. By definition, it would have been dead
right before
it evolved the vital organ.
Yeah. What's really happening today, and every year that goes by, it is creating more problems for evolution, is that science, true operational science today, is confirming the young age of the evolutionist old age fossils. Mm. I mean, that's sort of a tongue twister in a way, but basically what we're saying is that science and scientific discoveries, which we present at the museum, are becoming evolution's biggest enemy.
Biggest enemy, where the scientific discoveries, like for the sun, for example, NASA just recently announced that the sun is made of a different variety of oxygen and nitrogen than are the terrestrial planets, including the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that this is shocking, it's surprising, it's stunning. They have to come up with wild secondary assumptions to explain, because they thought that the Earth would have the same kind of oxygen and nitrogen that the sun has, the same isotopes.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing when they figured out that the sun was not spinning like it should be spinning rapidly. It has 98% of the mass of the solar system, but it only has 2% of the spin. Why is that? The discoveries are showing the error in the naturalistic assumptions.
That's absolutely right. The sun is one item, and of course, right now, we're seeing the results of the sun with all these big sunspots and interference with some of our communication systems. But there's other things. You can go into the physics, actually, of the atom. You know, some people look at carbon-14 and they say, well, you can't trust it or anything like that.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it's probably the most accurate of all of the scientific testing, because with the new accelerated mass spectrometers that are out there, they can actually count each atom of carbon-14.
It's incredible how sophisticated we are becoming in our ability to observe the creation. So when they want to figure out how much carbon-14 is in a specimen, they really are reaching the edge of absolute knowledge by finding out how many atoms as compared to the stable carbon-12 or carbon-13.
That's correct.
So when you have a dinosaur fossil that shouldn't have any carbon-14 in it, and here we are with carbon-14 that decays in only thousands of years, this is pretty strong evidence that things are young.
Yeah. And, you know, we like to think, for example, that when we're working with ages, and with carbon-14, you can also go into soft tissue, too, because you think of Mary Schweitzer when she was doing work at Montana State University here with the soft tissue and the T-Rex bones and so on. We think that actually it started there, but it really didn't. The published articles go all the way back to 1977.
Wow.
Dealing with soft tissue. I mean, I've got a list in front of me right here of 42 different articles.
Oh,
starting
my.
In 1977.
Otis Klein, I don't have that list. This is exciting. You know, I did go back and I found about a dozen or so articles, not necessarily refereed scientific journal papers, but some of those too, about a dozen or so dating earlier than Mary Schweitzer's big paper in 2005. But it's exciting, the list you have. Boy, do you have that on email? Is there some way maybe I could see that list?
I'll email it to you, very definitely.
Wow, I'm thrilled. And let me just say it, even though we're on the air, bob@kgov.com.
Okay.
Bob@kgov, that's our website. While we're at it, your website, creationtruth.org, is that the best way
that is
for
correct.
Folks?
Yeah.
All right, creationtruth.org. And if somebody wanted to email you, Otis, how would they do that?
It's fact, F-A-C-T, at midrivers,
all right.
midrivers.com.
All right. In fact, because that is the acronym for your foundation, Advancing Creation Truth.
That is correct.
So when your website is creationtruth.org, I'm at bob@kgov, K-G-O-V.com. And if you could email me that list, I would be thrilled. I'm in a debate right now with an atheist, Aaron Robb, pretty well-known atheist, and he has been rejecting that we have discovered dinosaur soft tissue. I went through, I reviewed about a dozen peer-reviewed papers just in the last couple weeks, and there is powerful evidence that we're finding original biological material from dinosaurs.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I actually pulled three of these. If we had time, I could make mention of them.
Yeah.
But one of them, it doesn't happen to be a dinosaur, but this was published back in August of 2009 in Geology Today.
All right.
And there was a 150-million-year-old fossil squid that was found, and it still had ink present. So now, yeah, we know that squids, you know, use ink when they're excited or what have you, but to have it still around after 150 million years...
Yeah, right.
Oh, and it's impossible.
Right, because biological molecules break down so that eventually, just because of physical entropy, entropy as in the laws of physics, because of molecular harmonics and atomic harmonics, these complex molecules should break down into their constituent atomic and molecular elements so that the biological structure should no longer be evident. Now, that ink, we had reported on that. I'm so glad you reminded us, Otis, of that. The ink was dehydrated. It was desiccated. But all they had to do was rehydrate it.
That's right.
And they were able to draw beautiful artwork. In fact, they drew a squid with its own ink.
It's still ink.
Right.
And it shouldn't be.
No.
Yeah.
No.
You know, and then there was late 2009 research. You may have reported on this at some time, too. This came out of Ireland and the United Kingdom, where they had been over to Spain. And this was reported in the Proceedings of the Royal Society B. I mean, we're talking about peer-reviewed journals now. And in the beginning of the 20th century, there had been a lot of mining operations there in northeastern Spain.
All right.
And this is where they found the salamander.
Oh, tell me about this. I haven't heard about this.
Okay, well, the salamander, it had fully intact muscle tissue, blood-filled vessels.
Ah.
And as a quote right from the article, it had the highest quality soft tissue preservation ever documented in the fossil record. They described it as fresh meat.
Oh, my. It sounds almost like a frozen mammoth,
yeah,
but it's in Spain, and it's a salamander.
Yes, and it was assigned an age of 18 million years.
Oh, no. Boy, you know, if the meat at the butcher shop would stay as well preserved, butchers would make more money.
That's true. But, you know, what's interesting about this, though, is that the authors described this, and there's a quote, fresh meat, as extremely decay-prone. So that right there says it can't be millions of years old, and it's in sedimentary rock. And another thing that's interesting, this was not found encased in anything. It wasn't encapsulated in, like, bone. It wasn't inside bone. It wasn't inside amber, you know, something that would keep it away from the environment. No, it was just found in sedimentary rock with no protection whatsoever.
Wow. Now, the most recent papers, there's really only been one anti-soft tissue big paper published, and that was just a couple years ago now. And they said that this alleged dinosaur soft tissue was biofilm, that is bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been rebuttal papers now. We're talking about papers appearing in the world's leading science journals with authors representing the world's leading universities saying, well, guys, that's a reasonable thought that we're looking at bacteria, but here is all the evidence why we know we're not looking at bacteria. We're looking at original biological material.
I think at this point, and you're absolutely right, that's the only paper I'm aware of that was against the soft tissue. I think it's pretty well agreed now that we do have all original biological material.
It's certainly going that way. In that paper, Otis, and it's the one that interpreted, and we link to it on our website. In fact, I'm in a debate with this atheist, Aaron Ra, and it's turned to the topic of dinosaur soft tissue. And I not only linked to that paper, but I excerpted it. And what they've done is they have proposed a mechanism, unintentionally, whereby perhaps some of this soft tissue is being preserved. Because even as creationists, we say, you know, we've been studying mummies for decades, and they know that biological tissue decays. Mm-hmm. Proteins decay. DNA decays. What's going on here? Well, it turns out that bacteria can perform a process which would be a preservation process. Formerly, it was believed that bacteria would only help toward decomposition. But it turns out they have now some experimental evidence that bacteria could attach to the surface of a bone, or maybe a salamander, and in effect crystallize. The bacteria itself can form a very thin protective coating around biological material, and then stop the decay process to a certain extent. It's not going to stop the atomic and molecular decomposition process, but it would stop the process whereby external contamination would continue the decay.
I've heard a little bit about that. You're up on that more than I am, but let's take a look at something that is not biological, even if it is a little crystal around it. In our atomic energy program, they say that they can go ahead and encase atomic waste in real super high-quality stainless-type steel, and then that gets encased in cement, so they want to put it like at Yucca Mountain or something like that.
Right.
And what do they say? Well, we can't guarantee this beyond 5,000 years.
What a great point. What a great point with this most brilliant engineering. It's like we're hermetically sealing this radioactive waste, and we're saying, look, it's probably going to get contaminated within a few thousand years.
Yeah. You know, God's creation is marvelous, and I'm not saying a bacteria can't make a little structure like that, but
it's
my goodness, for to be 18 million years old?
Right. And in Archaeopteryx.
No way.
And Otis Klein, the curator of Montana's fabulous Glendive Dinosaur and Fossil Museum, which I strongly recommend that you visit. Anyone in the audience who could possibly get to Glendive, Montana, you owe it to yourself, your family, to go to the museum. It is just so much fun, so informative, so encouraging, and it will help build you and your family in the faith and your trust in God's word as the truth. And so, Otis, they have reported now on Archaeopteryx, which they say is 150 million years old, which it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And they have found biomolecules, biomarkers representing original biological material. Not enough that we can call it tissue, but actual biological material from the Archaeopteryx. And it is absurd in the highest degree to think that these little tiny bones in Archaeopteryx are going to stop all molecular decomposition for 150 million years.
Yeah. You know, it's an interesting way that they come up with those dates, Bob. Basically, they say, as you just said, okay, we've got this tissue, it's 150 million years old. If it's a T-Rex, it's 65 million. If it's a salamander, it's 18 million. And they start with the premise that that's how old it is. And then they go ahead and say that the salamander or the T-Rex or the Archaeopteryx, what we see is original tissue. Now, we all agree with that second part, it's original tissue. The conclusion then, that the original organic matter has persisted for, what they said in the first half of it, for 18 million, 65, 150 million years.
Yeah.
But that's all wrong, because what they've done is they've committed and they're doing it purposefully, they've committed a logical fallacy. And it's, in popular terms, it's called begging the question, where the supported conclusion rests on the premise that assumes the first conclusion.
It's circular reasoning.
It is circular reasoning.
To say, well, golly, who would have thunk it that proteins would last for 100 million years? Who would have thunk it?
Now, nobody would have. But if the fossil is 100 million years old, then the proteins have to have lasted that long.
Right. Well, could we talk about carbon-14 for a moment? Because
sure.
Do you remember, Otis, I don't know if you recall this about our show here, Real Science Friday out of Denver, Colorado. We offered a grant of a lot of money to Jack Horner at Montana State University.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
You remember that? To carbon-14 date a chunk of their soft tissue T-Rex.
Mm-hmm.
They found two, their B-Rex and their Wankel T-Rex.
Mm-hmm.
We said, look, here's a grant, $23,000. It only cost you $3,000 to carbon-14 date five different specimens.
Mm-hmm.
And the $20,000, it will go toward your work or the museum or whatever. And they turned us down. Jack Horner said he talked to Mary Schweitzer. Well, they turned us down, but thankfully now there have been two peer-reviewed papers that have carbon-14 dated their dinosaur fossils.
Mm-hmm.
They both, and this is just in the last couple of years, they both reported a significant amount of carbon-14, which we knew that's what they would find.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that because that's what we've been finding, including creation scientists, for decades now.
Mm-hmm.
And they find it everywhere. Coal, oil, gas, amber, petrified wood, diamonds, everywhere it shouldn't be. So they say, well, in this mosasaur, a dinosaur-era marine reptile,
correct,
they said, here's this little bone. We know there was no contamination in that bone because we found original mosasaur tissue, biological tissue, but we found 5% modern carbon.
Mm-hmm.
So they said that must have been from contamination. Now, right there, it seems like they're drawing two contradictory conclusions.
Well, you know, it's interesting. Actually, my third item I was going to talk about was the mosasaur.
So, all right. Well, please explain it for the audience, because this is just a stunning discovery.
Yeah, the mosasaur, they say it's supposed to be 80 million years old.
Mm.
As you said, it's an extinct marine reptile. And they have found soft retina tissue, blood residue, skin. In fact, so much skin that they've actually been able to determine the scales, the detail, the size and the shape of the scales and the skin almost from head to tail. They've just found an awful lot of soft tissue.
The fact that they're finding different kinds of tissue, Otis, is helping to falsify the claim that this is all bacteria.
That's correct.
Because bacteria is not going to mimic the right kinds of proteins in the right places in the anatomy of the dead animal.
Yeah.
So when they find the kinds of proteins they expect to find in the center of the bone or in the retina or in the skin or in the feather, then what they're doing is they're confirming that this is actual biological material from the animal, not
that
bacteria.
That is correct.
Right.
Now, the carbon-14 date, if my memory serves, that came up on the Mosasaur was 24,600 years.
Wow.
Now, you and I know there's reasons why they would get a date of 24,000 as opposed to maybe 5,000.
Right, but it's thrilling. It's thrilling.
It's not 80 million.
Right, it should be carbon-14 dead. There shouldn't be any measurable carbon-14 in it because it disappears over thousands of years.
Yeah.
So how do they explain? They, of course, they need to explain away the presence of that modern carbon. And I think they use a few different techniques. Like they'll say it's contamination.
Well, the most accurate way to test for carbon-14 is using the brand new accelerated mass spectrometers. Now, they've been around for a while, but they've got some new ones. And some of our dinosaur bones have been tested using these new ones. And like I said, there's a 24,600 year on the Mosasaur.
Yeah.
Well, we have a Hadrosaur, a duckbill dinosaur, that tested at 23,170 years.
We had
a Triceratops that tested out at 30,110 years.
Now, the Hadrosaur is a duckbill dinosaur.
Yes, Triceratops,
what does that look like?
Got the three horns on its face, the two big horns over the eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the nose horn.
Right. Okay, so now when you say we have, the museum is not only a museum. You guys are a full-service museum. You also sponsor fossil digs.
Yes.
They're in Glendive. You have your own tremendous piece of property. And are you guys part of the Hell Creek Formation in Montana?
Yes, we are. That's one of the reasons why we're located here, is the dig site that we have is in the Hell Creek Formation. In fact, the very top of our dig site is where the Hell Creek Formation stops. Hmm. Actually, it's called the Fort Union Formation above it. But we're at the top area. We've got about 150 feet of the very top of the Hell Creek Formation.
Hmm.
And we have five different layers of dinosaur bones on that particular piece of property.
And you guys have been excavating dinosaur fossils for years now. And so, Otis, you're saying that some of your specimens are being carbon dated, mm-hmm. and they're coming up with in the range of this Mosasaur. And you know what's interesting? If this was just all contamination, if it was just really junk data, mm-hmm. well, mathematicians could analyze data coming from scientific experiments and observations, and they could typically discern when you just have junk. You don't have real data. Well, that kind of analysis has been done. For example, with the decay of the magnetic field of the Earth, with instance after instance where creationists are saying, look at the data, and the evolutionists are saying, well, that data is not reliable, and then we go the extra mile and we verify the data, that this data has integrity. It's telling us something. It's not junk.
Well, that's true. And also, we have not dated this ourselves. We go ahead and collect the specimens, and then we send the specimens or a portion of the specimen off to world-renowned secular laboratories to do the dating.
And typically they'll treat it, they'll scrape away the exterior of the bone.
Absolutely. They treat it to remove any possible contamination.
Right.
And just to let you know how close they are, on the Triceratops, one of the Triceratopses came in at 30,890 years. Another Triceratops sample at another laboratory came in at 30,110 years.
Wow.
I mean, you know, they're within a thousand years of each other.
Right, which is very significant, and there needs to be no carbon-14 if, in fact, this specimen is millions of years old. So here's what they'll say. They'll say, well, it's contamination. But on the Mosasaur bone, this tiny little bone, they said, we know that there's no contamination in the soft tissue. It's original biological material.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if there's contamination that bone is being exposed to, well, your original biological material is going to go out the window.
That's right.
A long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. And within diamonds, you're not going to have contamination within a diamond. Mm-hmm. Yet they find C14. So they say it's neutron capture. But I interviewed a geologist who has experience in nuclear physics. And he said to Real Science Friday, he told us off the air, he said, I spent years bombarding elements with neutrons in the private sector. And he said, carbon just doesn't want to capture a neutron. The carbon 12, carbon 13, it doesn't want to absorb neutrons. You're not going to make carbon 14 out of carbon 12 and 13. As a general rule, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And that was pretty interesting to me. Mm-hmm. It's like, wow.
And carbon 12 is extremely stable. You're right. It's not going to change.
Right. So they have this problem that the world looks young, Otis Klein.
Oh, yes.
The world looks young. And your museum, could you tell us, we only have another minute, tell us a little bit about, let's say, one of your newest exhibits there.
Well, the newest exhibit will be installed in 2 weeks.
Oh, my.
And it's actually a copy of the famous Sternberg find back in 1952 in central Kansas. It's a 17-foot-long Audax fish with a 6-foot fish right inside of its stomach.
Oh, my.
And the fish inside the stomach, it wasn't even partially digested. Obviously, it's reduced to bones.
Right.
But you don't see part of the bones there. No, it's all there.
Right.
And this just, it's there at the museum to show the absolute disaster that the flood was. I mean, you're looking at a catastrophic burial. This is a big fish.
Wow.
It just had its last meal, and all of a sudden, in the space of a hand clap, it's covered up, and it's dead, and it doesn't even get a chance to digest its food.
And quite often, these enormous animals are also compressed to something as thin as a piece of paper, almost.
Yeah.
That's maybe an exaggeration there.
Yeah, well, this one isn't compressed anywhere near like that. It actually is more like 3D.
Three-dimensional, which is so exciting. That's a more thrilling fossil when they're 3D. But the point is, we have billions of pieces of evidence that these creatures were killed rapidly.
Yes.
All the clams that are not open, they open after they die.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, this is exciting. So that in and of itself is a good reason to plan a trip to Glendive, Montana. How far are you, Otis, from Denver? I've driven it, but I don't recall. Do you recall?
Well, I think it's... Now, don't hold me to it.
Yeah.
I know I've done it in a day real easy.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like, I think, 550 miles.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, you could drive it in a day. And, you know, maybe some of the guys at Denver Bible Church will hear this and want to plan a church retreat out to your neck of the woods. It's just such a thrilling mystery that you have there. And I want to thank you, Otis Klein, for your service to the Lord and to the world.
Well, Bob, I've enjoyed it immensely. And I really thank you for your radio program.
Well, you're
because it's bringing the truth to a lot of ears.
All right. You're very welcome. And so, Otis, I'll be thrilled to get that email. What a great list you've got.
Yeah.
Okay. God bless you, Otis
you
Klein.
Too.
All right. And that is the curator of the Glendive Dinosaur and Fossil Museum. And, wow, he has a list of 42 articles on soft tissue and fossils going back to 1977. Boy, am I eager to see that list. And we'll add it to our realsciencefriday.com/dinosaur soft tissue. What an important resource. God bless you guys. This is Bob Inyart inviting you to read our manuscript, The Plot, for an overview of the whole Bible. Call us at 800-836-9278. That's 836-9278.